Today is February 17th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
It was an outrageously slow news week, folks, so we're going to take a take this week to slow down and catch up on some odds and ends in the news. Let's start with a fallout from last week's big story.
And that story, of course, was the Apple essay on digital rights management and digital downloads. Last week, we talked about some industry and analyst reactions, and this week, people just went right on handing out those opinions. Some were favorable to Apple's position, including comments from the big boss at Yahoo Music, Dave Goldberg.
His words: "I've long advocated removing DRM on music because there is already a lot of music available without DRM, and it just makes things complicated for the user." He also indicated that he was displeased with Microsoft's DRM technology, which he said, quote, "doesn't work half the time."
And compare and contrast, then, with comments from MacroVision CEO Fred Amoroso. And he was kind enough to offer the help of his company to turn FairPlay into a DRM technology every content provider can use. His comments implicitly express doubt about Apple's assertion that it can't license FairPlay without compromising its security. But it's also pretty clear that MacroVision, just like anybody else, would love to get in on the iTunes pie. I think it's pretty safe to say fat chance on that one.
It's also worth pointing out that against the backdrop of a record industry somewhere between cool and openly hostile toward the notion of DRM-less digital music sales, there are two stories that go against the prevailing wind. The first is the widely circulated story about EMI considering selling music without it, whatever considering means. I've considered plenty of things, like kickboxing or eating cream cheese that had clearly started to mold. But neither of those thoughts really led to all that much activity.
The other story was one we carried about an interesting survey of industry executives in Europe, and they were showing widespread dissatisfaction with the DRM models. And among the results, 62% of those surveyed feel that dropping DRM would drive adoption of digital music. Only 11% feel that dropping DRM would threaten digital music revenue.
Then, of course, there are the comments from pundits. And I must confess, even I couldn't keep my mouth shut. You'll notice that I include a Tech News World article in our show notes. Catherine Noyes, the reporter on that article, spoke with me for a while about this whole story earlier this week and posted a pretty good summary of the situation. So I said, hey, what the heck, we'll throw that in the show notes.
Cool. Okay, let's also use the downtime this week to point out the consolidating public reaction to the iPhone of the existing smart...
That would be the sound of Jeff banging his head against the microphone, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, that's exactly what that was. Okay, for some reason this week, I'm having a clear problem keeping my brain and my tongue working in concert. So let's see if I can say this in English and have it as something everyone can actually understand. Okay, so what I was trying to say is that as long as it's a slow week, and apparently really slow for me, that that there's been a lot of consolidating of public reaction to the iPhone and also among the existing smartphone manufacturers. In specific, Research in Motion CEO Jim Balsillie has said that the iPhone doesn't pose a threat to his firm's consumer-geared BlackBerry Pearl. He said it's kind of one more entrant into an already very busy space with lots of choice for consumers. Mr. Balsillie said of Apple's phone, but in terms of a sort of a sea change for BlackBerry, I wouldn't think that's overstating it.
It's, wow. Man, it's been a long week, hasn't it?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so he just says, in terms of a sea change for the BlackBerry, not so much for them.
Those
comments. Yeah, those comments aren't far from others made by other industry heavyweights. Over the past couple of weeks, we've seen a bunch of industry reactions, all of which have said some version of, great, we're glad to have Apple join the party. Many industry comments have framed Apple's decision to make a smartphone as a validation that the all-in-one phone-based devices are going to be the way of the future. So that's just to kind of wrap up the industry reaction as we've seen it over the past several days, past couple of weeks.
Okay, and just so you know, the way I said that quote, I believe that is exactly how he said it too. It was striking. Okay, and one more story this week. Lionsgate films are now available for download through the iTunes store, which means that Apple now has about 400 films available for purchase.
Longtime listeners may recall that last year I spent a while mentioning each week which TV networks had started selling on iTunes. We won't keep this up for long, but the first few editions are the most important since they signal the rate at which the industry is signing on to this whole concept of digital downloads of whatever their product happens to be. You'll recall that the TV networks signed on one by one much more slowly than the music labels, which all started out signed up on the first day that iTunes was selling music. The movie studios have moved much slower still, but with three big firms, that would be Disney, Paramount, and Lionsgate at this point, the movie department at iTunes seems to be gaining some momentum. So we'll keep pointing out these new acquisitions until the ramp up reaches a kind of steady state, and it's pretty clear how this is going to pan out in the future.
Okay, and I have one other little iTunes-related thing to add into all that. I've had a few questions come in this week, apparently because it really is that slow. People have been asking, where is the classic Star Trek series and Star Trek Enterprise on the iTunes store? They were there, now they're gone. And from StarTrek.com, what they're saying is there are, and I'm doing air quotes, technical difficulties, and both shows will be back later. So for whatever that means.
For whatever that's worth.
For whatever it's worth. And, well, apparently, once it all comes back, it'll be worth about $1.99 each.
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? Okay.
all right. And let's now. So that's enough of that, right? We can kind of move on with life. Like I was saying, it's been a pretty slow news week. And so as tends to happen when we have a slow news week, we don't want to bore you with more details than you need. I figured we could set that aside, just do a little bit of a product roundup. We haven't done this in a little while, so let's talk a little bit about products here. There were a few, actually, that I wanted to mention, and it seems that in the notes that I've got for the two of us, I've only got one here. Jeff, why don't you kick us off, and I'll try and find the other two I was going to talk about.
Okay, I'll talk slow to cover for you. MacResearch.org announced on Monday the first wide-scale, publicly accessible computing grid based on Apple's X-Grid technology. It's called Open Mac Grid. And for those that aren't familiar, what X-Grid is a software technology that Apple developed that allows you to cluster Macs together when they aren't doing other processor-intensive tasks. So you can make these kind of computer clusters very easily, which is a cool thing. Now, anyone with a Mac and an internet connection can donate CPU cycles to the Open Mac Grid, and then those cycles will be used to assist researchers with CPU-intensive tasks in a fashion similar to SETI at Home, which is the program that SETI's been running to search for radio signals from extraterrestrial sources. Open Mac Grid will be open to any scientist who submits a proposal, and of course, assuming that proposal is approved, scientists can apply for access to Open Mac Grid at macresearch.org.
All right, and one of the other, that actually is, looks like a really cool product.
It does.
Just generally speaking, the idea, and like you said, scientists have to submit their projects. But the idea that you could submit your project to this grand parallel computing setup and just have people's random CPU time or excess CPU time donated to your scientific problem is actually a fascinating idea. And the idea, I forget what the phrase is, John Martellaro, who wrote the article, had a wonderful phrase in it, which was something like embarrassingly parallel.
Embarrassingly parallel. I like that.
So that's kind of cool. There was another another application that we just mentioned this week. Present Your Apps 1.0, Eternal Storm software released Present Your Apps on Monday. The utility lets you hide the dock and menu bar in most applications and includes a preference that lets you select the applications it works with. It's free, and it's available for download, of course, at their website. Kind of a cool concept. It reminds me of the settings in Logic Pro, which I use to record this show. It has a setting where you can hide the dock when you start it up. Question for you, Jeff. There was a product that you reviewed this week called Media Central by Equinox. Tell us a little bit about that. That actually, I was very interested in that piece of software when I started looking into it at the Macworld Expo.
You know, when I first started playing with Media Central, I was thinking, why would I want this if I can use Front Row on my computer? So why do I need another application that duplicates what Front Row does? And the answer is because Media Central does a lot more than Front Row does. Where Front Row consolidates into one single interface the content that Apple lets you manage, meaning iTunes, iPhoto, things like that, Media Central goes beyond that and says, sure, let's manage all of that content, but now let's take it a step farther and add in all of the radio streams from the internet that you want, video streams from the internet, internet TV programming, and there's some video games thrown in, and then also, why not add in Skype? And then if you're in Europe and have access to the, DVB-T wireless digital television system, watch TV with this thing too. And it's very, very cool.
Yeah. So that's, now this is a piece of software, right?
Yeah, this is a piece of software. And what you can let it do, if you want, is let it take over your Mac, and then it becomes the whole interface for your digital home entertainment system.
So it takes over your screen like Front Row does, right?
Right. Or you can run it in a window if you'd like.
Okay, and it works on a Mac. This is not like a piece of hardware like Apple TV is, right?
No. This is just a piece of software. When I say just a piece of software, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it's software, and it doesn't require additional hardware to do its magic.
All right, and is there a remote that comes with it?
No, actually, it's compatible with the Apple remote, and there's a couple other remotes from, I just forgot the name of the company, I want to say ATI, that they actually certify work with the product. But I also found that if you have a remote control that can manage to send keystroke signals, then it'll work with that too. And I experimented a little bit with my really old KeySpan presentation remote control that does IR communication. And that's designed to do just that, send keystroke commands. And it worked just fine. I was really impressed.
All right, and so presumably you could use, if it works with keystrokes, then you could use any external, like for example, I have this Contour Shuttle Pro on my desk that I use to launch applications and switch between applications and manage iTunes, and
absolutely.
So presumably I could use that if for some reason I wanted to.
Right, and if you're ambitious and wanted to write your own command set for the Logitech New Look, which I have one sitting here, I'd try it and see how well it works. You could control it with that kind of a device too.
All right. And so, and it sounds like, I mean, this is not, if you wanted to use this to do stuff on your television, you would have to hook up a Mac to your TV, right?
Right. Right.
So for example, if you have a PowerBook and it has that S-Video out, or it's got a a VGA and you can somehow split that into something that your TV can read, then you could do that.
Right. And apparently they're also planning on including some type of Apple TV support as well, which will be nice because then that's one less device you have to worry about using a separate interface for.
And it would be very interesting to see what exactly they allow you to do. For example, if it allows you to completely hijack the Apple TV so that you're running their interface on Apple TV, that would actually be kind of cool to give you a choice about how you want to navigate your media and what kind of stuff you want to do.
I agree. And I have a feeling that might be where they're going because they are, in essence, already hijacking the interface for iTunes and iPhoto. So why not go ahead and hijack the interface for the Apple TV as well?
All right. Well, we'll just have to see how it works. Once we finally get a hold of an Apple TV at some point and have a chance to talk about it.
I can't wait.
All right. Well, I think that's all we've got this week. Again, if you guys have thoughts about either news stuff that you want us to talk about, stuff that you've been seeing in the news that you have questions or thoughts about, or if you have stuff that you want us to review, products that you want to hear about, send us an email, roundup@macobserver.com. Short little show this week, but like I said, it was a slow news week. What are you going to do?
Yeah. And hey, I think I'm all warmed up. I'm ready to start the podcast now.
Oh, all right.
Excellent.
It is February, what is it, 20-something, 2007? This is the app. Oh, wait, we already did that.
Yeah, and it can't be the 20th yet, can it?
I hope not.
I hope not.
I forget what day it was already.
I think it's the 17th.
Oh, yeah, February 17th, 2007.
That's right.
I could start the show for a third time if you like.
That'd be swell because I think I'm just about ready for it.
All right.
Or on the other hand, I could say, and that's the news. Thanks for listening to Apple Weekly Report.
And I'm sure all of you are so sad that we're leaving you right now. Our content is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. That's all I've got, folks.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online.